IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of All Things Policy. My name is Suman, and I have with me my colleague, Apoor. Today, we are going to discuss, or at least try to understand, what India's hunger and nutrition challenge is. The topic itself is very vast, and we would not be able to cover all facets or all challenges regarding this. But we hope to give you an overview of the entire challenge that is before the country. It has been in the news the last whole week because we saw a paper or a news item being published that the Global Hunger Index, which is published by an Irish aid organization and a German NGO, actually ranked India 101 out of 116 countries. And as always, this has created much furor in the press. The index is one thing, but we need to understand the entire landscape, the entire challenge that is before us. The index is just a measure. However, to understand this reality, we need a lot more in-depth analysis, and there is no better person than Apoor, who has done significant amount of work in the development sector. He's currently with us working as a staff program manager. He will help us understand basic concepts, and then we can talk about the index itself. Apoor, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Suman. And I think what has happened, Suman, is that two interesting reports or studies have been published in a span of 1 month. So Global Hunger Index of 2021, which was published this week. But we also sort of need to understand that a few weeks ago, PLOS published a report which says that Indian adults, and specifically in the age of 15 to 25 and 26 to 50, their average heights are actually declining with respect to other adults worldwide. And the authors, who are public health scholars and nutrition scholars, they argue that we have to move beyond genetics, because the conventional understanding is that it is because of the genes, the specific Indian genes, that the heights of Indian adults, both men and women or children, are, that's why their heights are low. And there has been a sort of ferocious and a sort of at times a very argumentative debates a few years ago between a few scholars, which I will come to after a short while. And they argue that it is because of genes, Indian genes, and genetic sort of altering, that is why the average height of Indian adult or Indian children are low as compared to others.
That becomes an easy cover to, you know, mask other things, right? When you blame
that becomes an easy cover to mask other things. Because that's where in 2013, Arvind Panagria, economist, he published a paper in, I think, July or August 2013. I think it was that year when I ventured into development sector, and this debate became really very interesting. So he published a paper in EPW, in which he argued that it is because of genetics and some of the flawed methodology that WHO adopts. That is why the average, that is why the prevalence of malnutrition, and specifically stunting, which is the height per age ratio, is prevalence of stunting is high in India as compared to sub-Saharan Africa countries. So he used examples of 11 sub-Saharan African countries, and he has compared the life expectancy, infant mortality rate, under 5 mortality rate with India. And he shows that life expectancy is better in India as compared to sub-Saharan African countries. And infant mortality rate and other child mortality rates are lower in India. But for some very weird reason, the prevalence of stunting in India is higher in India as compared to sub-Saharan African countries. Because of this paradox, so he argues that this paradox may be due to better health facilities in India as compared to sub-Saharan African countries, and this is and stunting could be because of genetical factors and not because of other factors such as gender or sanitation or malnutrition. To counter his views, there were several scholars who published their sort of pieces and rebuttals in the subsequent issues of EPW, saying that no, I think this is a wrong sort of an assessment, and there are several other factors such as status of women, the low birth weight of the child could be because of an anemic mother and low birth weight mother.
Maternal health.
It could also absolutely. So maternal health is completely correlates to the nutrition and the healthy baby. So that could be one factor. Disease due to poor sanitation could be other factor. Breastfeeding could be other factor. The status and the agency of women in a society or in a family could be other factors. So this is what I think lay of the land in India is with respect to malnutrition. I would just like to add another sort of point here, that this is what is also called a South Asian enigma. And this term was coined in 1996 by a scholar, Ramalinga Swami. And he said that this is precisely what he said, that in India, Pakistan and Bangladesh, we have high per capita incomes, low child mortality rates, significantly higher stunting rates than sub-Saharan African countries. And that is why he said that we need to focus, our focus should be beyond genetics, and we should focus on other factors that I have just spoken about.
Yeah. Again, when you're talking about this South Asian enigma, in common parlance, we tend to compare, all these nutrition or health or any of these, parameters as such, we compare them with more developed countries. And that is a flaw that most of us make. That is a mistake that most of us make. So the right frame to actually compare is, what I have understood from reading, is actually to compare China because of the number of people, the size, the population size, Bangladesh because of how recently they started on their development trajectory, and Vietnam because we have comparative per capita incomes. So is that a right way to look at this whole thing? I mean, comparing with the other South Asian countries, do you think that is a good comparison to make?
Right. Yeah, we can compare India with respect to other South Asian countries, Suman, as long as we are aware of nutrition specific that are direct factors and nutrition sensitive or indirect factors that impact child's nutrition status. So nutrition specific factors could be access to food security, or the health of a mother, whereas nutrition sensitive could be not so direct factors such as status of a woman or sanitation, disease, ecosystem, environments, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Right?
I get that. I think now that distinction is clear, because otherwise we tend to mix up all of them as direct causes for malnutrition, right? Yeah, that's good.
Right. So you mentioned Bangladesh, and I think Bangladesh is an outlier and is a classic case study to understand what kind of policies could work and improve nutrition status in a country. Now Bangladesh has per capita income lesser than India, but of late they are doing far better than India, just because their focus has been on nutrition sensitive factors. So education of women, empowerment of women, sanitation, cleanliness, disease, vector-borne disease, waterborne disease. So because of the focus on all these factors, they've been able to reduce the prevalence of stunting and malnutrition in their country.
Okay, that's very interesting. The other interesting thing I read was Vietnam. Okay, Vietnam and India both had similar trajectories in terms of, economic growth, etc. But large poverty reductions happened because of set of economic reforms. But Vietnam recorded large reductions in malnutrition or any of those. But in the corresponding period of good economic growth, that was not true for India. I mean, it is really perplexing to see why that could be so, because I think their approach was more on specific programs for nutrition enhancement and, reduction in expenditure-based poverty and calorie-based undernutrition. That has been their focus. However, in India, we have, tried different things, and of course, there are a lot of things to learn from what has happened what we have learned through the years in India. But I think it's important to keep in mind what others have done so that, we could inculcate a few of these things going forward. Yeah, so having discussed the basics of it, we'd like to take a quick break. We'll come back and study the architecture, the service delivery architecture in India, as well as we will talk about the health index itself and what was wrong, what was right in it. Welcome back. I hope you guys are having a good time listening to this, and this is providing you some food for thought. So we will go on to how are all these nutrition and health schemes actually, implemented in India. So Apoor, can you tell us something about broad contours of the architecture that deliver these schemes or deliver nutrition and health outcome, to the vast masses in India?
Right. So I think India has had a wide range of delivery architecture or mechanisms with respect to nutrition and food. So we have our public distribution system, which is the PDS. We also have integrated child development scheme, ICDS, midday meal schemes. And in 2013, we also had the National Food Security Act that made access to food kind of a fundamental right, right? Earlier, it was not articulated as a fundamental right, but after 2013, it is now a fundamental right. So these are some of the schemes which are there at the national level. Apart from that, there are state level schemes also. And when I say state, so some states have done really very well in food distribution and making sure that the children and the lactating mothers and the pregnant mothers are getting food and food supplements. Karnataka is a prime example. And I think Chhattisgarh did really very well in past few years. Some other states, Kerala and Tamil Nadu, of course, they are always the outliers. They have done very well when it comes to distribution of food and food supplements. Some of the states, because of weak state capacity, because of leakages, and because of several other factors, they have not been able to do that well. And Suman, I think you are listeners, and we would recall that few years ago, there were deaths due to starvation in some states because the citizens were not able to access the food. And one of the reason was because once you start making these schemes as targeted schemes and
exclusion,
once you have
the risk of exclusion.
So you exclude. Absolutely. So there is a risk of exclusion. That is why, scholars and economists like John Dres and Amartya Sen, they say that you need to universalize these schemes and just do away with exclusion and targeting, because it's not going to serve any purpose.
Yeah. So coming to the health index, what we were talking about, the global hunger index that we were, that was in the news sometime back, just to give you a broad overview. It contains four indicators. It is normalized over four key indicators. One is the undernutrition, which measures calorie intake itself. Two is child mortality, which is self-explanatory. That is number of deaths, number of children who do not survive till their fifth birthday. And child wasting. Now, child wasting is children below 5 years who have low weight when relative to their height. The child wasting and child stunting are more nuanced measures, right? So you're comparing height to weight. In child wasting, it is low weight relative to height. And in child stunting, it is low height relative to their other parameters. Like Poorv just mentioned early in the show, that we have seen that in India, we are seeing stunting making a comeback, and scholars are worried about this phenomenon. So, yeah, so these are the four key indicators, and these are normalized, and you get an average. Now, what this average actually says is that, you know, overall, we have moved from 38.5, 28.8 in 2012. And in 2021, it is 27.5. How does this correspond or correlate to the NFHS data? Would you have some idea or two on that?
Right, Suman. So I mean, first, I'll just sort of, you know, talk about Global Hunger Index. So you have rightly pointed out that there are four indicators that are involved in calculating Global Hunger Index: undernourishment, wasting, stunting, and mortality. So if you see that, they have weighted averages, and these weighted averages go, and, you know, and then we calculate that particular index. Although it's called as hunger index, it's not literally hunger. It's not talking about hunger per se, but it is actually talking about nutritional status of the children of that particular country. And it is a proxy of how well a country is doing, because it is one of the most important indicator, right? So that's where that's a sort of a slight distinction between the term and the perception that comes from that term.
Okay.
Right. The latest NFHS 5 data, there are only 22 states that have, you know, they have published reports only from 22 states. This kind of corroborates the Global Hunger Index, kind of corroborates the sort of analysis or the statistics that have come from these 22 states, because stunting, wasting, and undernutrition have increased by 12%, 13%, or 16%. I'm not sure about these percentages, but I think these are the numbers for these, and they have increased, and it's alarming, because, you know, these are the decades of high economic growth, relatively, I would say, but you have a very sort of elaborate welfare architecture, but at the same time, you have these indicators that are quite alarming. Stunting and malnutrition, some states have increased significantly. And when I was just reading the report, I couldn't help but recall what Arvind Subramaniam wrote a few months ago about strange welfare architecture of India. So, I mean, and I've spoken about this in some of the previous episodes as well. So the new welfare architecture of India is designed in a way that the state or the government is able to provide some targeted private goods, such as bank accounts or gas cylinder connections, some of these private goods are being provided to the citizens really very well. But other frontiers, such as public health, you know, nutrition, child nutrition, education, on those fronts, we are lacking behind. And the reason being, because these private goods are easy to deploy, easy to monitor, and tangible also. Exactly. They are tangible and they are visible also. I think yesterday or day before yesterday, one of the Congress leaders, she was in Uttar Pradesh, and she said that, you know, if the Congress would make the government, then they would provide what, scooties and I think tablets or laptops or something. I mean, good. I mean, this is good because it has some benefits, and some of the benefits can be seen from that bicycle distribution scheme of Bihar, and it is a well-researched scheme. But beyond that, we are not able to go beyond that. We are not ensuring that these girls to whom you are providing scooties are not anemic. They are, you know, they are well fed.
Yeah, how
absolutely,
will they ride this
absolutely.
They're anemic, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and their nutrition indicators. Yeah.
Yeah. There is a huge opportunity cost to this, because you're giving out private goods, you are allocating all your funds over there. Your budgetary allocations towards ICDS or any of PDS, making the PDS system, you know, more widespread, or bringing out more efficiencies within that, is going to reduce, right? Because once you do this, there is less money to be spent on other things. So, I mean, and all this data that we have here is pre-COVID, right? And COVID has, I mean, based on the pre-COVID data is what they're getting out these numbers. Now, COVID has only made the situation worse. And if we do a study, I mean, or if we do one of the any kind of study, it's really going to show us, you know, the reality that we know, but the numbers will be even, you know, bleak. So what can we do as policy analysts? What are the suggestions that we can make towards, I mean, this is going to be a long drawn process. It's not something that can be solved for in the next 1 year or 2 years. It requires a longer term horizon. So is there anything that you have that you think that policy, how policymakers can change these things to, you know, make this, to move the needle at least a little on this?
I think so. Suman, the first thing that the policymakers or the political actors, because that's where the entire sort of policy is centered, that's the epicentered, I think they should get away with the focus on these targeted private goods and you know, start delivering on public goods that have a widespread public impact and that builds human capital in our country. So that's the bare minimum thing that they can do. Second, as you rightly said, that because of COVID-19, because of pandemic, most of the supply chain sort of infrastructure through which some of these sort of food schemes or nutritional schemes were delivered, they have been affected. Disrupted, absolutely. So we need to go back and start plugging the holes there and start sort of transforming and reforming some of those schemes. When there was a, you know, in 2020, right after the first pandemic, thousands and thousands of migrant workers started walking on streets because the first sort of, you know, the first trigger was the food security. They were worried about food security because they can't afford food or other sort of, you know, living cost, basic necessities in there. And there was no support system. In fact, it was a civil society organizations and good Samaritans who stepped in and you know, plugged that hole. There should have been a scheme or a policy that could have taken care of these migrant workers nutritional kind of sort of, you know, status. So there are several things that the state or the policymakers can do, I think there are a lot of good sort of ideas out there, and they just need to sort of go out and reach out to experts and researchers who have done amazing job in studying and researching these topics and get their ideas while designing their policies.
Yeah. So all these indices, whatever, ease of doing business, global hunger index or something else, they just point us to a certain, you know, certain direction or so. But when we make that, you know, that as a target, then we are losing, you know, we are losing the big picture, the broad picture. So like, as somebody said, when a measure becomes a target, it just ceases to be a good measure. So I think we can, you know, end with saying that this is a chronic problem, needs to be addressed at, you know, priority, needless to say. But the indices just help with pointers, and the work on the ground needs to just continue as, you know, with greater rigor. Would you give your closing thoughts?
No, I think absolutely, Suman. Of course, one index or one number or statistic shouldn't drive our policies or shouldn't help us change the way we look at a particular issue. But there are several other factors that we have spoken in this episode. We need to focus on those factors. They may not directly impact the nutritional status or hunger status. They may not impact in next 4, 5, or 10 years, but it may impact in 15 or 20 years because most of these things are intergenerational.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Apoor. Thank you for joining us. And we'll catch you in another episode. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, If you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle at TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.